Welcome back to another episode of Bitch Radio. I'm Sheerston Johnson, the web content manager at Bitch Media. From the almost absence of characters with disabilities on television, to the whitewashing of characters of color on the big screen, to a sore lack of leading non-white protagonists in the summer's blockbuster roster, Hollywood does a pretty awful job at reflecting its viewership's demographics. For the most recent issue of Bitch Magazine, that's the one with the meat grinder on the front, I had the pleasure of interviewing Rebecca Yee, the former national director and senior EEO counsel of Screen Actors Guild Affirmative Action and Diversity. I asked Rebecca about the role of consumers in media diversity, what representing the quote-unquote American scene looks like, and the efficacy of the Bechdel test.
Well, I was wondering, I know you probably get this a lot and you're probably sick of saying it, but just to explain sort of like in your own words what the Affirmative Action and Diversity Department of SAG does.
We have two main functions. One is that we enforce our policy of non-discrimination and diversity on behalf of our members. So in our collective bargaining agreements and our theatrical TV, new media commercial contracts, we have a policy that, of course, the producers agreed not to discriminate, not to harass, to provide accommodations. It's a pretty lengthy policy. So we handle all of our claims that, like, say, our members file. Like, if they're discrimination, harassment, they're not getting any accommodations. During auditions, if they're being asked pre-employment inquiries, if the casting breakdown is worded illegally, we monitor those. So there's a variety of provisions within the policy that we enforce. The other function is that we essentially promote diverse hiring of protected groups. And we also work with these protected groups to try to develop initiatives and policies and programs to educate the industry, to advocate for diverse hiring. And so the six groups we work with, and they're member-led national committees, performers with disabilities, women, senior performers, our Ethnic Employment Opportunities Committee, which is for our performers of color. We have American Indian Task Force, and we have an LGBT Actors Committee. So we provide support to these groups as they try to advocate also for diverse representation and employment in the entertainment industry.
Cool. Great. I was wondering, I know that you worked in labor law prior to coming on to the Screen Actors Guild, and I was wondering what you saw, either if there was a big surprise when you started working with actors and performers when it came to employment discrimination and employment law, or if there were surprising similarities.
I think that's a really interesting question because a lot of people ask me that. They're like, oh, why did you want to go into entertainment? Or, you know, if you were a labor lawyer or employment lawyer. And the truth is, I mean, people forget, I think, that SAG's a union. So it's actually, I'm still in labor. In a lot of ways, it's exactly what I have been doing because when I came into SAG, I started in the legal department, and it's enforcing the contract, you know, and making sure that people are getting paid and getting their meal breaks, rest breaks, waiting time penalties, stuff like that. So I think the only difference I feel is probably the industry. What I find a huge difference, in particular to actors, you know, when you go to an interview, for example, right, there's a certain kind of employer-employee etiquette that people respect. You don't have the employer asking you how old you are, what's your religion, or what's your race, and where are you from. Whereas here, that's very common during an audition, right? People forget that audition is actually a job interview. And casting directors and producers tend to ask those questions, and I understand why, because they're trying to find the right, you know, person to play that character, but it's still illegal. And so that's what I find is very interesting, that people forget that actors are employees and that there's certain protections that they are entitled to that I don't know why. They just tend to forget that it applies to actors.
I know that your department advocates for an accurate portrayal of what you call the American scene, which I think is really cool. And I was wondering if you could talk more about what the American scene means for
that. That was a term that was coined by, again, our members. And it means just that a reflection of how our society, our American society, looks. And that includes people of color, women, people with disabilities, LGBT people. that's why I think it's really cool when you see American scene, because to say if you're having a production in Kansas, right, I think people aren't going to say, hey, why isn't that diverse? But say if you have a hospital scene in San Francisco, and if all the doctors and nurses are white, I mean, that's not a reflection of the American scene, because clearly that's not the case. So I think that it's a very reasonable standard, because, again, it, using the word American scene, it doesn't mean, like, it has to be diverse in every situation. It's just that you have to understand what the scene is and to be able to reflect it accurately. Like, for example, Friends, right, the show Friends, it's a New York street, and if you really look and watch all the background performers, and, you know, all the main characters, they all happen to be Caucasian. And that's not realistic, because obviously New York is extremely diverse.
What that also made me think about was the term general audience, because I think what we hear a lot is that, you know, this film appeals to a quote-unquote general audience. And what that usually means is white males between 18 and 34. And I just thought that was, like, this interesting contrast between the American scene and the general audience. And I was wondering if you could speak to that, where how the American scene isn't really represented in a lot of films, but it's thought to appeal to this quote-unquote general audience.
The entertainment industry, it is also a business. And I feel like when they talk about general audience, they're talking about their market, which, again, what you just said, white males, 18-34. I actually, in my opinion, I think that's kind of an outdated way of thinking about the even business. You know, now that the U.S. is becoming more and more diverse, larger percentages of, you know, Latinos and Asians, as well as, I think our society is very, very diverse, and I feel like all these people have money, you know? I mean, they may not have a bunch of money, but they're all consumers, you know? And I feel like, I think that the entertainment industry, for some reason, I don't know why they're slow on it. Like, if you look at commercials, for example, commercials are really, really diverse. They have a wide variety of people being represented, because I think advertisers know that their market is large, and it's not just the white male at 18-34, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm wondering where that disconnect is. Like, I know,
yeah.
I think the affirmative action and diversity does, you know, a great job of ensuring diverse casting, but I'm wondering where in other levels of film or television or new media production, distribution, what changes you think need to happen in those areas to, you know, really ensure this American scene is presented?
What I've noticed for our diverse members, what they often complain about is two things. One, that there are so few roles written for that particular group, like meaning like there's so few roles of, an Asian woman in her 30s doing XYZ, right? I mean, actually, I don't even see that, you know? So there's so few roles written in the first place. But another thing a lot of our act members complain about is that they're not even considered for nondescript roles. So descript roles are when it's very descriptive, right? It says, you know, woman, female, this race, this age, et cetera. But there are also roles that are nondescript, just person walking down the street or whatever. And they're not even considered for those. They complain that a lot of their agents and people submit, like, the default's, like, again, white male, and so they feel like they're not considered for those roles even. I mean, and a lot of our actors think it's the writers, that they need to write a lot more different kind of characters that are multifaceted, that are diverse. And then I think it's also the business. Like I said, I actually think a lot of diverse films are being made, and I think, especially in the new media world, there's a lot, I mean, that's kind of the Wild Wild West, and I feel like there's a lot of people making strides there, but I feel like it's distribution. It goes back to that model, that business model. Like, films are being made, but if they're not getting picked up from distributors, they're not going to be seen. And again, I'm not sure what that disconnect is, but there's certainly a disconnect because, you know, we provide diversity in casting incentives. So far, independent films, if producers or casting directors hire a diverse cast, we allow them to increase their budget, but they're still able to qualify for those, like, low-budget minimums to pay our actors. We know, we're tracking this, and we know that there are a lot of diverse films being made, but then the second step, which is distribution, I don't think they're being seen. So it seems like the movies that are being picked up are the ones that are made by the studios, and they tend to stick with the traditional business model. And the ones that are being picked up, the independent films, they don't tend to be diverse, so even though they are being made. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of areas that can be improved.
Well, I want to ask about what us people, moviegoers, see and interpret versus what happens behind the scene. And I was wondering if you've heard of the Bechdel test. It was coined by Alison Bechdel in her comic strip called Dykes to Watch Out For. And what it is it's sort of a rubric where you see if a film passes three steps. If there's more than one woman in it, if the two women speak to each other, and if thirdly, if they speak to each other, that it's not about a man. And that was sort of caught on in a lot of feminist blogs. The New Yorker has mentioned it recently. And I was wondering, from your perspective, if a rubric sort of like that is actually a useful or realistic way. If there's something that you think, do you think that's a useful way of actually seeing like how women are cast and represented in films?
We, as Gil, let me maybe make this clear, to clarify that, because your test talks about content, it talks about, or they talk about a man. Our position is that we don't have any, we don't comment or have any position on any content. Because we do respect the producer's First Amendment right to produce. We get a lot of calls. Say, like, there's a movie that was really racist or sexist. I mean, there's tons of sexist movies, but I don't get called from that because I think we're used to it, right? But say I get a racist movie and, you know, we start getting calls from our membership, like, oh, my God, this is a racist movie. Do something about this. If there's no violation, you know, during the auditions, during employment, if they treat and our members right, because they are hiring other members, right, even though it may be all white cast, the content may be racist. If there's no kind of discrimination against those members, if they're hiring them, if they're not violating anything and they've done everything correct, we don't make comments on content because we feel that they've hired our members, they've given jobs to our members, treated our members fine. They have the right to produce whatever they want. And we usually tell our members who are offended by content, we tell them, look, we as a guild, we're not going to do anything about it, but here are some names of organizations, community advocacy organizations that you can talk to that they will do something about it. Because that's when I tell members, this is an issue that you've got to take on, not as a member, but as a consumer. If you don't like what you see, don't buy it. Don't go see it. And that's going to make the difference. I mean, I personally have, you know, beliefs about it, but as a union, we don't comment on it.
Right. Well, speaking of consumer response, I know there. I mean, North American film or a lot of film has had a history of whitewashing people of color in film and television. It, you know, I feel like it just has kept going recently. You've got like The Last Airbender, Prince of Persia, Akira. But I feel like there's been a larger public outcry about this more recently, especially from the Asian American community. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that and what influence you see this outcry having on the industry and what influence you think it should have on the industry.
I think it's great. Again, I think that as consumers, if they don't like what they see, they should do, you know, voice that by boycotting or protesting or writing a letter. I think that's awesome, and I think it works. Again, as a union, we wouldn't comment on that. We have those issues a lot. Like, all those movies that you just described, we got calls on that when it happened. And they're like, why didn't they hire an Asian? Or there's shows where there's a character with disability played with someone who's able-bodied. We get tons of calls, do something, and we really can't because we have to represent all of our members equally. Again, as a guild, we don't have comments on that. But personally, I think it's great. The fact that people are out there doing that speaks more volumes than a call that I can make from the guild. They're the ones buying the product. So if your customers or your consumer base is unhappy with the product, I think the people who are selling it will listen.
Is that how you see consumers of media being the most powerful as far as being able to fight to see themselves represented on film is through their pocketbook, you know, paying for the entertainment as well as reaching out to these groups? Are there other things that you see consumers doing in order to affect that change?
Being able to tell the studio or the network or the producer what they do and do not like. And I think they listen. Like, in the last 3 years, I've been in this position. I've been to so many different panels, and they all talk about how they really take those letters and those comment seriously. I don't know if this is still the case, but they say like one letter equals 10,000 responses or something, or it represents 10,000 consumers. If they know they see one letter, they know that other people are feeling this way. So I feel like it really does have an impact. I feel like maybe people have lost confidence in that, but I mean, all the people who I've spoken to, executives in studios and networks, they tend to think that it's still powerful. I feel like it adds a more well-rounded way of advocacy. You have actual consumers on the ground saying what they like and not like. But then you have, I think, the advocacy groups and the guilds who come together and kind of coalesce all that information. Because, you know, you may have a consumer who may not like a certain product. But, for example, it would be the guilds who have information on who's being hired, who's being employed, actual, like, numerical statistics on what's going on, what's the landscape. So I think you need to have both to be valuable in your advocacy.
During your time as national director, I was going to ask if there's anything that you've been particularly proud of accomplishing as director?
For me personally, of the groups that I've been working on with, I think two groups that I'm most proud of is probably working with Performers with Disabilities and also American Indians. I feel like if you look at the numbers, these two groups aren't represented at all, really. Very marginalized. That was really my focus. Each group is definitely experiencing, you know, difficulties getting employment. But I think American Indians and Performers with Disabilities in particular, you just don't see them on TV or film. And so I've been working pretty hard to try to help get their images in media to be seen more, and trying to work with them more on certain campaigns. Like the IMPWD campaign was started when I was a director. And that campaign is a 3-year-long campaign. So throughout those 3 years, I feel like there's been an increase in the number of employment of PWDs since I've been around. I feel like I've seen more. I feel like anecdotally, this is all anecdotal, of course, because we don't really have a way to measure it. You know, in the casting data reports, disability is not included. I feel like anecdotally, I've been seeing more and more. I've been talking to our members who have disabilities, and they feel like they're getting more auditions. I mean, it's not a huge, huge difference, but I think it's starting. It's starting to percolate. I just feel like working with those particular communities, because they're really, not that they're hard to work with, but I feel like it's a hard, you know, I feel like for some reason, you know, people get it. Like, of course, they get it when they think of diversity. They're going to include people of color. They're going to include women. But I feel like there's some groups that are just not even considered, and that's performers with disabilities. Seniors also, actually, they aren't represented as much as I think they should be, you know, considering their huge percentage in our U.S. population. So, yeah, I guess those are the two areas I'm kind of most proud of, all the different initiatives and policies that we've worked on.
To read my full interview with Rebecca, pick up the latest issue of Bitch Magazine. To learn more about Screen Actors Guild Affirmative Action and Diversity, visit sag.org/content/affirmative-action-and-diversity, and that link is also available at bitchmedia.org/audio, where you can find casting reports, resources, and download Diversity A to Z, a SAG reference for industry professionals, which is a really great resource. Many thanks to Rebecca Yee and Hope Barkin for their help with this podcast. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Bitch Radio, and you can always visit bitchmedia.org/audio for more audio segments. Bye!